is Friday. It is the 12th of February. It's 2 days before Valentine's Day 2016. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Mincing Rascals. I'm John Williams from WGN Radio, and on Facebook, I'm King John. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune, a columnist there. Hi, Eric Zorn.
Hi, John. What's this Valentine's Day event you're speaking of? If you clarify that for me later,
clearly
please.
You're a romantic
man.
Wonderful husband.
Kristen McQuarrie is here, too. She's an editorial writer and columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Are you a romantic, Kristen?
No, actually, no. We'll
you're
get
a pragmatist.
To that.
And Steve Bertrand, who's the most feminine of the four of us, is also here from WGN Radio.
I'd take offense if it weren't so true.
I know. I meant it as a compliment,
I know,
Steve.
And I took it that way.
I can't wait to hear what your Valentine's Day plans are.
Well, it's not just a day. Let me just say
that. Oh, my goodness.
So let's get rolling and talk a little bit about what's happened this past week on the presidential trail. We always talk about that. There was a debate last night on the Democratic side, and the Republicans make things interesting. The field got thinned a little bit with the disappearance now of Carly Fiorina and Chris Christie bowed out. Steve Bertrand, what was the headline for you this week on the presidential front?
Well, I think what happened to Marco Rubio after doing well enough in Iowa, you know, and they made the mistake of leaking out their 3-2-1 strategy, number three in Iowa, two in New Hampshire, and then one in South Carolina. And then all of a sudden he had to live up to it. And when he didn't in New Hampshire, you know, he's failing now and he's behind the eight ball. I mean, it's just delightful the way Chris Christie took him out, A, but then B, the fact that Christie didn't benefit from it, that New Hampshire didn't sort of benefit the I don't want to say bully, but the aggressor. And instead it was this guy, John Kasich, who did so well.
Yeah. A high percentage of the people who voted in New Hampshire made their decision within the 3 days beforehand, meaning they had the benefit of watching Christie, you know, sort of paint Rubio into that corner. And you can imagine some of those people going, ah, the hell with it. I'm going to go with the happy warrior. And Kasich, out of the blue, not entirely out of the blue.
No, he spent a lot of time there.
He did 106 town meetings. He rather ran for governor there. But lo and behold, there's John Kasich in the number two spot.
With his Mr. Rogers act, with his acceptance or his victory speech or whatever you call it.
I thought it was
second,
a great speech.
It was very touching. It seemed like from a different race and a different time almost, didn't it?
Well, then maybe that's why he got those votes.
Maybe.
Because everyone else is running the other race.
You just got to look at your neighbor and give him a hug if he's not doing well.
Spend a little time, Eric. Spend a little time.
Isn't that nice? I mean, the reason I liked Rubio out of the gate was because the first thing we saw was the hostility in Trump and the cynicism in Huckabee and Cruz, and there was fresh-faced, cherry-cheeked Rubio with his soaring Obama-esque rhetoric. And then that kind of went away, and we all sort of reconciled ourselves to the fact that this is going to be a hard-fought slugfest. But then there's this frumpled guy in a brown suit down on the end, and I want to believe that people are starting to gravitate to that on its own merit, they just like that.
He's been called the Democrats' favorite Republican.
Right. I mean, he actually is not that moderate. He's just moderate compared to this field.
Right. I understand
He's got that Midwest sensibility that if he could perform better, he could be a great nominee. But in this race at this time, he's just that was his shining moment. It's done. It's gone.
Happens to the Republican establishment now? I mean, it just seems like the conventional wisdom here is that this race, this result, has blown up the strategy in the Republican establishment of finding a plausible contender to go up against Cruz and Trump and knock those guys out, because I don't think the Republican Party itself wants either of those two men at the top of their ticket.
Remember when you were a kid, you'd go to outside the Hornsby store, they'd have that little rocking horse you'd put a quarter on and you'd ride it? Does that sound familiar?
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
All right, so Marco Rubio got to ride the horse in Iowa. John Kasich did in New Hampshire. Maybe it will be Jeb Bush in South Carolina, but they just keep changing riders.
I think Trump is, I mean, the fact that he won New Hampshire, that's where I thought maybe he was going to stumble. And he won by so much. I mean, we're talking about John Kasich coming in second, but he was still, 10 points behind
Trump?
Oh,
he's doubled. No,
double?
20, wasn't
20.
It? Close to 20, something like that.
So, you know, let's not get so excited about the second place finish. I think Southern state Republicans are kind of Trump's bread and butter, and I just don't see what's going to stop him at this point.
And Nevada will be good to him, too.
One other thing that might have happened at that debate and didn't, you know, it started with Dr.
Ben Carson
basically calling Ted Cruz a liar for his rumors before the caucuses that Carson was withdrawing from the race. And that was a strong moment that might have been the story of that debate coming out and then going into South Carolina, but it was just completely overshadowed by the Rubio thing. So Cruz might have really benefited by Christie taking on Rubio.
How many of you saw the debate on Saturday night or watched the highlights anyway?
Sure.
Clearly the one story, the big storyline was how robotic Marco Rubio was and how that endlessly repeating that one line sank his chances. And he even said so in his speech on Tuesday night that it was on him that he really messed up. I thought the most interesting thing about that debate was how gloves off the other candidates were about Trump. And I'm hearing on the ground right now in South Carolina that is really starting to change, that they are going after Trump now really hard, that they thought that the strategy of kind of leaving him alone and picking on each other and going for second place was the way to go. That didn't turn out to be all that smart. And so now they've got to coalesce around beating Trump, because Trump has been a great sideshow. He's been endlessly entertaining for us on this podcast, and every other podcast that touches on politics in America has enjoyed the Trump story. But the Trump story is getting serious now. I mean, this guy
it's
looks...
It's been like, serious.
No, I know, but Kasich has it has not been, and it's not.
Kasich has a PAC that started raising money to try to take down Trump months ago, and they have to be careful, because if he becomes the nominee and they have so severely damaged him in the primary, then he has no chance against the Democrats. So they do have to be careful as to what they...
John is still a denier.
I'm absolutely a denier. Why wouldn't I be? I live in America. I have faith in Americans. Jeb Bush is this week starting to run as the mainstream Republican. He's decided to embrace convention because he knows that at the end of the day, people aren't going to throw in with something as cuckoo bananas as Donald Trump.
Donald Trump stood on the stage this week and called another candidate, a major candidate, I'm not going to say it, but... refer to the female anatomy.
It rhymes with wussy.
Right, whatever, okay? And he said it on the stage and then said, well, she asked me to repeat it.
A woman said it.
I know, but and everyone reacted, and then he said, she said this. But the point is, the guy who wants to be our president stood on a stage, used that term to describe any other person.
What's your point, though, Steve?
It helped him.
No, it
That's
did
my
not.
Point.
That's, that is it exactly
It didn't hurt him. It didn't
why...
hurt him.
Nothing has hurt him.
And he's going to roll in South Carolina, John.
Nothing has hurt him.
Okay.
That's my point.
I don't. He's going to roll in South Carolina. First of all, Iowa and New Hampshire don't determine the presidency or even the candidacy for the presidency of the United States.
Okay.
Really, I'm not so interested in your guys' affection for your love of Donald Trump, because you're all big Trump lovers.
Oh, no.
I think we are all on record as being anti-Trump.
I'm terrified. I'm getting scared of Trump, because if he can confound our expectations in these primaries. I mean, when he got into the race, remember he came down the escalator and he gave a speech in front of a bunch of hired
God, that was ridiculous.
People in the audience.
John, I'm sorry.
We all just thought, this is just a joke, and this is going to last a couple of months, and then he'll go away and we'll start talking, being serious. And then he would say these crazy things, and it would just help him. And suddenly it looks like he's got a strong core of support, and
can't discount it. Although I have the National Review, one of the most conservative online publications, the day after his announcement, Trump's announcement, the headline was Ape Rides Escalator. Witless Ape Rides Escalator. And look, everybody has to eat their words.
The National Review put out a whole special edition trying to
bring it down. Hold on. Go ahead. Yeah, that which is really, journalistically, that's intriguing to me, Eric. But go ahead, Steve.
A couple of weeks ago, Neville Chamberlain character was on Downton Abbey, and I think, you know, you're the Neville Chamberlain of the Mincing Rascals.
I didn't even finish my thought. I said, I know you guys all love Donald Trump, but what disappoints me more is that you don't have more faith in American citizens. The people don't want Trump. They're smarter than that. They see this show, and they're still going, yeah, I'll vote for it. They're not even saying I'll vote for it, but whatever those poll numbers are, remember, he's not over 50%. I still don't believe that you guys don't have more faith in the American people on this.
2 weeks ago, I would have considered your scolding to be plausible.
The numbers speak for themselves, John. This is not emotional. This is not anecdotal anymore. There is data. There are results. People are voting for him. I mean,
he won't be the
end
nominee.
Of story.
So what
okay.
you're saying? But wait, but what
because I said so.
We need to verify our bet on this, though, because you have been saying this for
a while.
7 months, 8 months, and I was on board at one time, and then I jumped ship. So,
well, if we remember, the record will show that John has been touting the candidacy of Marco Rubio.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so, all right, Eric, do you really think, I know we did this last week, but let's just segue out of this segment with you guys all putting your mark down. Steve, Eric, Kristen, who will be the nominee?
I'm just going to go with Trump.
I'm still thinking that Trump looks right. Although I'm still thinking that the way things are going.
I thought you were a brokered convention.
Well, I was first a brokered convention guy, and then I've been going to Trump and back to brokered convention. But it's either going to be Trump or a brokered convention. That's a pretty wimpy little way of putting my money down, but that's where it's going
to
be.
And a nod to you, Pollyanna, I'm going to say Jeb Bush.
Now you're crazier than me, Steve Bertrand.
Well, who else is it going to be if it's not Trump?
Bloomberg.
He wouldn't get the Republican nomination, though.
No. It's too late for Bloomberg to jump into the Republican.
Right, yeah, he wouldn't be. Yeah, that's right, that's right. Okay, scratch that. And then any last thoughts about how Bernie Sanders, I saw one poll today that said that he and Hillary Clinton are virtually tied in Nevada, not South Carolina. But is this thing going to fade pretty quickly, Kristen McQuarrie?
You know, I have to say I watched the debate last night and he was really good. Yeah. I mean, he was just so genuine, and he kind of reminds me of a Jimmy Carter or maybe a Paul Simon. You know, his ethics are untouchable. I don't agree with his politics or the math that, you know, we can afford all of the freebies that he keeps handing out. But no, I think he's getting better on the campaign trail and in these debates. And I would be worried if I were Hillary.
Well, I think she really is worried. Did anyone enjoy her science fiction costume she wore last night?
I'm not doing that.
I just
left WGN where they talked about that for half an hour. I don't think we can do that.
Can't talk about what someone wears?
Well, I don't know.
Are we going to talk about what Bernie was wearing?
No, because Bernie's not trying to reshape his image, and Hillary is. Well, I thought it was patently feminine, and it looked different to me, and I thought, oh, everything's a message, and I thought that was part of it, Steve.
I thought it looked feminine. I thought it looked like it was Ho Chi Minh City. I mean, she had that collar and the
kind of silky sheen to it, but I'm not so interested in the style of it per se as I am what she's doing. She's looking softer.
No, but I thought she did a really good job. I thought they both did a really good job last night. And I thought that, you know, Hillary's clearly trying to make the issue here whether Bernie Sanders is allied with Barack Obama enough and whether he's got the experience in foreign policy. Those seem to be her two talking points last night. And she hit him pretty hard on the skepticism that he showed toward Obama and the criticism that he has leveled at Obama all along. And she's going after that African-American vote in South Carolina. Nevada is going to be really close. No question about that.
I think she's going to roll in South Carolina.
Well, we'll see what happens to the polls in a week. I think Kristen is exactly right that he is doing very well, and as voters get to know him there, they're going to warm up to him because he's promising a lot, and people like to hear that, like free college. Yeah, that sounds great.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like, he's kind of the inverse of Trump.
I think it was a really issue oriented, deep debate that probably explains why I couldn't hold an audience and everyone was watching Donald Trump, these intelligent Americans, by the time it was over in Shreveport.
There is a measure of civility. I was talking to my wife about it, and, you know, she and I are on the same page on our politics, but it sure seems to me that the Democrats, granted there's only two, and granted, like you've pointed out, Steve, they don't have to fire against the wall the way Republicans do the current administration, but it's just so much more measured, and it's so much more thoughtful and not hostile. It's just a completely different tone, the Democrat debate, and less entertaining maybe, but it's a completely different animal.
That's because there's just two of them. If there were five or six of them and they're all clawing for 30 seconds, it would be different.
Are we at all interested in Gloria Steinem and the whole debate this week about the feminist vote and why it's leaving or flocking to Hillary Clinton?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting topic. I mean, both what Gloria Steinem said and what Madeleine Albright said was stupid, right? I mean,
they both said stupid, stupid.
Well, I think we've also conflated a little bit what they've said. Finish that thought, Steve.
I was going to say they spoke from a different era, right? I mean, Madeleine Albright's been saying that for years. But
did Madeleine Albright support Sarah Palin? I mean, I think what she said is just nonsensical. If people didn't hear, she said there's a special place in hell for women who don't support women, which is, I think, you know, is nonsense. And what Gloria Steinem said was that the reason that young women are flocking to the Bernie Sanders campaign is because there are a lot of young men in the Bernie Sanders campaign, and young women like to go where the boys
that's,
are.
That's not a fair representation of what she said, though, or at least what she meant.
Okay.
Well, why do you laugh at me about that, Eric? I don't think that that was.
I thought
her
that
point.
Was. I listened to the entire interview. I thought that it was. That's a fair summary of what she was saying. She obviously had some other things to say about the fact that young women today don't appreciate what women of her generation went through to advance the rights and opportunities of women, and that's probably true. On the other hand, Bernie Sanders is speaking to another radical change, a radical step forward in their view, and so I can see why women would be gravitated towards someone who is saying that. I mean, it's not like these women have turned their back on what Gloria Steinem did. They're trying to advance it another level. So is that a fair summary?
I just think, well, let's let John respond since he...
No, that's fair enough. I'm intrigued by, I'm kind of mystified by why women or young women aren't supporting Hillary's campaign more.
Well, I think it speaks maybe to a maturity of the movement, right? That it's no longer just if it's a woman, we're on their side. Now it's like, well, if it's that's not our only decision. The gender's not the only decision. You can be a pro-women's right candidate and be a man or be running against a woman.
Yeah. I agree with you. The move... To be a feminist is to choose the life that you want to lead, whether you're a stay-at-home mom, whether you work. To be a feminist is to choose candidates based on issues and policies and not gender. That is what feminism is to me. And so I just find it so backward and insulting when people imply that just because I have ovaries, I'm going to flock to Hillary Clinton's campaign. Or on the Republican side, Carly Fiorina, if she happened to be still in the race. To me, it belittles what we actually consider when we're voting for candidates. Like men don't. I mean, do you just vote for someone because he's a man? Does anyone ask that of you? Does anyone question it? No, I'm voting for my candidate based on economic policies
usually
and the positions they take and
the
record.
It might come up in November this year.
Barack Obama, you don't think benefited from being black? You don't think that he got in part a vote, and didn't people vote in part for him because he was black?
And against him too, right? I mean, I think that certainly cut both ways with Barack
You think
Obama.
It was a net negative or positive, his race?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think his youth, his charisma, and the fact that he's African-American all contributed to the voter enthusiasm that helped him beat John McCain the first time. So I don't know, but I mean, racism and sexism are still serious problems in this country. There are going to be people who vote for Hillary Clinton because she's a woman, and there are going to be people who vote against her because she's a woman. And we know that. And I don't know how you measure that, but that's certainly the case.
When Barack Obama went to Springfield this past week, he met up with a couple of old Democrat pals and a Republican pal. They played cards. They talked to the media a little bit and each other. Any takeaways from that meeting, guys? I had a couple, but... I don't know, Eric, do you have any thoughts about his visit back and his little lecture to the country about partisan politics?
Well, I thought it was a nice speech, and he's a great speaker, right? He's funny and engaging with the audience there in the chamber, and what he said, who can disagree with a lot of what he was talking about
right.
How important it is to come together. The reality is that the politics we have now is not that, and the candidates who are winning are the ones who are way out on the ramparts criticizing the other party harshly. So, I mean, it's a nice speech and a nice sentiment and something that I bought into. But, you know, ever since he got up in front of that convention in 2004 and says there's not a red state America and a blue state America, there's a United States of America, that's just been a fantasy almost.
Well, but a good goal to achieve.
Of course.
To
it's
shoot
wonderful.
For, right?
I like to think it'd be true, but I just don't think it is.
I was so disappointed at the end of the Tribune article when they talked about these things. And then they said, but it was like a State of the Union address. When he said something, the Democrats right. would stand up and applaud, and Illinois Republicans, this is just stunning to me, would not stand and applaud when he said something that caused everybody else in the crowd.
John, he gave a graduate-level speech to a middle school audience. That's exactly what happened. And if you watched it, I watched the whole thing, people were talking about what a great event it was. It just didn't click. I mean, the audience wasn't receiving what he was giving. I mean, I think the audience wanted to have this back slapping, yeah, our buddy's back in town sort of thing. let's have a kegger. And he was trying to give this future of America in the next 25, 50 years sort of address. And the two didn't marry. So when he was trying to make those points, you know, they were cackling from the audience and or, you know, not sitting on their hands or whatever. They weren't up to the speech, frankly, like they've not been up to so much.
What did we expect? Well, I was just disappointed by that. I maybe you're right about that, Steve, but it would seem to me like Barack Obama is going to give more speeches like this in the next few months than whatever it is you described. I mean, he is thinking about his legacy. I wonder if we'll remember in the short term or down the road at some point if he did fulfill his promise. Did he bridge the gap between Republicans and Democrats as effectively
well,
as he
no.
could have?
He says no. He's saying that he's sorry that he's failed at that.
Yeah, and where does the blame on that land? Did he find himself falling into the same trap that he campaigned against, or was it just that the other side was intractable?
I think the other side was intractable. I think
really?
I do. I think he tried. I think he extended olive branches. He tried to meet with them. He tried to forge a relationship with John Boehner, and John Boehner's caucus, the Freedom Caucus, would flip out. I've mentioned it before on this program, I think, that, you know, they wanted to go golfing together and to try to have some sort of normal civil relationship. And the caucus just, you know, rebelled. So I think they wanted to block him at every turn. They've always had their sights set on the next presidential election, and they weren't going to give him any victories.
I just wanted to mention the editorial in the Chicago Tribune today. Again, it's Friday. In fact, it's Abraham Lincoln's birthday, speaking
it's
of
Friday.
Barack Obama.
Eric Oprah.
Always wants me to do it
I
as
know.
Oprah Winfrey. And
now you do.
I know, which bothers me because I can't win
you.
Either way.
Please welcome our favorite urban cowboy, John Williams.
The Chicago Tribune editorial today is about how Chicago, the word, is synonymous with murder, and they point to the 400 or 500 murders that we may end up having again this year. We're off to a taking pace. I don't have a lot to say about that, guys, except that I'm just really saddened by it. It was predicated on the story of a young woman who is sitting in, what was the name of the neighborhood?
It's called Heart of Chicago. And I have not heard of that name. Maybe I wasn't paying
either.
Attention to my neighborhood names, but it's like 21st, South 21st and Damon.
Well, they described it as the confluence of the Ryan and the Eisenhower and the Kennedy. Like by that, I'm imagining it's over by the spaghetti bowl there. I'm not exactly sure, but
Jane Byrne Interchange, please.
Well, yeah, exactly. But that it's the heart of Chicago is a metaphor, isn't it? I mean, this is the problem in this city, and I don't think anybody has any solution to that. We can kick around things and I'll come up with ideas about how to fix things. Does anybody have any magic wand you would wave and then this would start to happen and that would cure the problem of the murder rate and the shooting rate in Chicago? It's just so sad. Anybody have anything for me on this?
No. The editorial at the end just said, you know, called out the shooters. When are you going to stop? And I'm resigned to just having no solutions.
It's really. Like living in a city with pollution. You know, it is there. And you can't escape it. It's in the air. And you just hope it doesn't get you. That's
well,
all.
I mean, the obvious answer is huge, which is we need better education. We need better job opportunities. We
right.
need more robust neighborhoods. We need stronger families. So if we can just check those off the list, I think we'll be fine. But
yeah,
and this
no
woman
kidding.
Was struck by a random bullet, they think, right? That was fired
yeah.
by someone who was shooting at
over
somebody
his
else.
Shoulder, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. And it was horrible. It was tragic. And yet, we had a conversation around the table at the editorial board the other day just about, you know, this happens all the time. Families get shattered all the time by this kind of violence. And because it's this this bizarre occurrence where this random bullet hits this young woman who's moved to Chicago to be with her boyfriend and start a new life. And her father had warned her not to come here because it's a dangerous place. I mean, it drips with sadness and irony. But we got to remember that these people, young people, older people are getting killed every day.
And the last thing I'll just say about this is that, you know, in Minneapolis, they look at it, and of course, Chicago's a bigger city, so the murder number is higher, but the murder rate is higher, too, and they just think it's not safe. I don't suppose any of you have changed your attitude about the safety of living in the city of Chicago and working downtown every day?
Well, Kristen and I both live in the city, and I can speak for myself. It's probably true for I feel perfectly safe in my neighborhood. I'm on the Northwest side. And, you know, walk around my neighborhood, and I think it is safe. There haven't been murders right on my street or on my blocks for, you know, for years.
I live in the very tony northern suburbs, and there was an attempted armed robbery of a bank about 4 blocks from my house last week.
There were two yes. armed robberies in LaGrange and LaGrange Park in the last couple of weeks. You know, really, if the location of these murders was different, something would be happening. If it was in Steve's neighborhood or Eric's neighborhood or Rahm Emanuel's neighborhood.
Or Kristen's neighborhood, too. I mean, you feel the same, don't you, about your neighborhood?
I mean, yes and no. I pay pretty close attention to crime statistics, and no, there are armed robberies and sexual assaults, and I'm guarded where I live. I wouldn't be out at night late, or I'm a little more guarded probably than other parts of the city. But I agree with you, John. It's so cynical that our leadership treats these murders as just numbers, because, like you said, if this were happening in Wilmette or some white neighborhood, we'd have the National Guard here. We would have police on every corner, and we don't. We don't have. It's just it does get brushed aside. There's just no question.
We'll pause here, come back, and when we do, we'll ask the gang what their recommendations are. I have a Valentine's-themed one. Steve, I'll be very disappointed if you don't have something Valentine-centric for us.
I don't know
us.
Where this is coming from.
We close each of these segments with something we essentially have as our recommendations, what we're reading, watching, or listening to, some advice for you if you're looking for something else to stimulate your mind. All right, Eric Zorn, what's your recommendation this week?
I'm really psyched about this new TV show hosted by Samantha Bee. It's called Full Frontal. It's on the TBS network Mondays at 9:30. It's the newest entry into the late night comedy, political commentary thing. And it is the show that I've been looking for since Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert went off the air. Yeah, Samantha Bee was a former cast member from Jon Stewart's show. She's brilliant, and she's the first woman in a long time to have a late night show. And the first episode was just terrifically funny.
Oh, I bet that Rubio wishes he left his kids at home tonight.
Let's dispel with this fiction that Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing.
Oh, guys, cheer up. Daddy's coming home soon. It's okay. Okay, Marco, you're rattled. Just keep your head down and oh, no. Oh, my God. No, he's talking again. Oh, no.
Why doesn't the media ask Hillary Clinton why she believes that all abortion should be legal, even on the due date of that unborn child?
Okay, that is literally the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Removing a baby on the due date isn't an abortion. It's called a cesarean. But you know what? That's fine. Keep telling your cabal of fetus fanatics that Hillary Clinton wants us to carry to term and then deliver our babies directly into a Vitamix so that Planned Parenthood can sell it to Whole Foods.
I would rather lose an election than be wrong on the issue of life.
Congratulations. Tonight you did both. Bye-bye.
I just felt like hallelujah. We've got the Daily Show ethos back, because the new guy on The Daily Show is not getting it done. So
that's what I hear, yeah. What about you, Kristen McQuarrie? What's your recommendation this week?
So I just finished a book called Euphoria by Lily King. If you like historical fiction, I would recommend it. It's kind of based loosely on the life of Margaret Mead, who was an anthropologist, and there's kind of a love triangle involved. So it's just a good read if you're looking for something a little more brain candy.
And, John, if you're not sure, you can Google her, Lily King and Steve Bertrand on books, and hear a very nice interview about that book.
Oh, did you interview her?
I did. Great. Loved her.
All right.
Was she delightful?
Delightful. And it's a great book. I agree. Really love that book.
My recommendation is, I was looking this week for Valentine's Day songs, you know, My Funny Valentine. And so I've actually Googled that one and went to it on YouTube. And one of the first searches that came up was for Britain's Got Talent 2013, a young woman who comes out nervous in blue jeans and sneakers. And, she's not deep in the competition, right? She's just somebody off the street. She's a hairdresser or a cosmetologist or something. And she just stands there and she sings My Funny Valentine. I've posted that video on my Facebook page. I'm such a sucker for these Britain Got Talent things because they're so predictable and formulaic, but they work every time. Backstage, they tell the story about this person who doesn't have much confidence, cut to the jaded audience that are like, yeah, right, you're going to be able to bring it. Then the person starts, cut to Simon Cowell and the panelists who are like, what do we have here? Back to the artist on the stage. And then finally it starts to swell and you feel yourself getting caught up in the emotion of this thing. And she's singing the song and afterwards she's just crying because she's had this moment. And they do that every week.
I was going to say, sounds like you never know what's coming next.
And I'm telling you, 2013, if you Google that, Britain's Got Talent, My Funny Valentine, that will be my Valentine's Day gift to you. How about you, Steve?
You've gone all out, John.
For Christmas, my wife got me a subscription to the magazine called Lucky Peach. Have you heard of that?
Mm-mm.
It's
no.
a food magazine.
Sounds dirty.
It's like it's food.
It is. It totally is. Whatever he's about to say, discount.
It's food and travel and sort of smart writing and everything. And I really like it. And I just found the website. And so they have an article on sausages for Valentine's Day.
See what I mean? See what I mean?
And so they've got different sausages they list, you know, and how they would recommend. Like early lovers would be Italian sausage because there's a little sweet, little spicy, but not too much. There's the breakfast sausage for the one night stand, hoping that a generous morning gesture might turn a fling into something more. There's the toad in the hole.
Oh, see, this is R-rated.
Which is, it's a 19th century British recipe. When Toad in the Hole first appeared in English cookbooks, it was called for scraps of meat and leftovers with the spoiled bits removed.
Wow.
Mm. Whoa.
So the name of that magazine is what again?
The Lucky Peach.
Lucky Peach.
You are the worst.
Thank you.
That's Eric Zorn, Steve Bertrand, and Kristen McQuarrie. I'm John Williams. Thanks to our producer, that's Kristen Decker, and our engineer is Bob Ferguson. Remember, you can download this every week. It's free. We are the Mincing Rascals, and we will talk to you next week on WGN.
You little rascal, you. You little rascal, you. You little rascal, you.
And every day is Valentine's.